Perek Chavbeis Pasik Dalid. Until last time we were learning about a guy breaking into somebody else's house, the whole concept of self-defense. You're allowed to kill somebody. If they come to kill you first, you're allowed to kill them, and so on and so forth. Now it says like this. Kiyavit ish Pasik Dalid. Kiyavit ish Sadeh Cherem. If a man permits his animal, okay, all this refers to, Yavir refers to the whole concept of animals going out and eating and destroying fields. So the Pasuk says like this, Ki Yavir ish as sadeh cherem, if a man will allow his animal to go into a field or a vineyard, v'shilach es be'ira, and he sends his, lets him loose, or he grazes it, u'bir b'stei acher, and it eats in somebody else's field, mate of sadeh or mate of karma yishalim. You have to pay from the best of his field and the best of his vineyard, you have to pay. Meaning like this, a person is obligated, like we learned, to make sure his animals don't go damage anybody else, or anything else. If you let your animal go out, and your animal goes into somebody else's field, he tramples the field, he ruins it that way, or he eats it, so the din is you have to pay. Regardless of what the excuse is. Now, obviously, if it was in a public place where the animal had permission to go, you're not always obligated to pay. But in this case, because he went into somebody else's field, you have to pay. And the Torah says, mate of sadeh or mate of karmi yishali, meaning you have to pay the best of the fields. The halacha works like this. You damage somebody, let's say you damaged them $1,000. You have to pay $1,000. You don't have any money or property. Bezdin goes and takes away your land. Okay, for $1,000. So the Torah says, like we were discussing last week, when Bezdin gets fields, the $1,000 from your field to pay for the damage that you did. So what type of field do they collect from? From the best. That means $1,000 of land. You can have Beverly Hills Estate, and you can have somewhere in the Midwest a field. Obviously, in more expensive, fertile fields, lesser field is worth $1,000, and that's what they have to pay. Now, there's an interesting argument in the Gemara.
What about those dogs that they are biting the people now? And
you bite them back. What are you asking me? Do they have to pay? Yeah, of course they have to pay. If your dog bites somebody else, if they bite you, they don't have to pay. If they bite somebody else, the owner of the animal is obligated to pay. Well, why not? The only question is, you have to pay whole damages or half damages? Is it considered normal for a dog to bite, or is it not normal for a dog to bite? Most dogs today don't go biting people. So it's very possible you'd have to pay half damages. Because the tam means something which is not the regular. Now, there's an argument in the Gemara between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. When the Torah says, the best of your field you pay, does it mean the best of the mazik's field, meaning the guy that did the damage, or the best of the nizik's field, the guy that got damaged? Meaning, you can have like this. What happens if the guy that got damaged, in Hebrew is called the nizik, the one that got damaged. The mazik is the one that did the damage. Okay? What happens if the nizik's best field is worth the mazik's junkiest field? So when Bezdin collects, do they collect the best field of the mazik, or do they collect the best field compared to the nizik's property? So then they would take the junkiest field of the mazik. Well, sometimes, if I damage you, and my worst field is worth the best of your fields, are they going to take my worst field or my best field?
Well, the base is equivalent to the damage that it
did. Yeah, but it's $1,000.
Right.
But you can have $1,000 of a good field, and you can have $1,000 of a lousy field.
In comparison to my field.
Right. So Rabbi Shmuel in the Gemara holds it goes by the guy that got damaged. Meaning when the Torah says mate of Sadeo, mate of Karma, means they collect, if I'm the Mazik, I damaged you, they will collect from my field corresponding with the best of your field. And Rabbi Kiva says, no, it means the best of my field, the best of the Mazik's field. Whatever the Mazik's field is, that's the best you can claim. Now, what happens if he's not paying him land? You have to pay cash or cash equivalent. You could pay junk. You can pay, in halacha, shava kesef is kekesef. The value of money is like money. For instance, if I damn you $1,000, I can give $1,000 worth of feathers. Or $1,000 worth of toothpicks. And you can't even, I have to give you $1,000. But I can give you $1,000 worth of toothpicks.
Condition that he can cash it in for
$1,000. No, we're speaking that it's valuable. It valued $1,000. If it's worthless, it's worthless. Yeah. I'm saying, if I pay you, I don't have to pay you cash. I can pay you shava kesef kekesef. I can pay you the equivalent of cash. So I have to give you $1,000. So if it's fields, Bezin will collect the best field. But if it's not fields, it's cash or equivalent of cash. You can pay cops, toothpicks, straw, junk, shmatis. Hmm.
Will the receiver of your payment accept?
Bezdin makes him.
Doesn't matter?
The Bezdin makes him take it. Same thing. The Gemara says, if you lend me $1,000, even, I mean, this is even civil law too, I can pay you back, if I want, I can pay you back $1,000 worth of pennies. And the Gemara says, Ein le olav ela ta'arumais. The only thing he can have is he can scream at the guy. Look what you did. This is the way you pay me back. But you can't complain. You lend me $1,000, you can pay back $1,000 in pennies.
Rabbi,
in pesos. Shekels.
Rabbi,
not
that's very unlikely. I mean, $1,000 of pennies.
I understand. I'm saying technically you're allowed to do it.
Oh, I see.
The question is Rabbi Akiva and other opinion. It's not aloha here?
The aloha is like Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so if he wants, the Mazik can pay
the best of his food.
Right. Okay. So in Metaltolin, you can pay him junk, so to speak. Okay. Next Pasuk is a very interesting Pasuk with a lot of details in it. Kiseitze Yesh. We learned last time, or whenever it was, 2 times ago, we discussed. There is my property damaging you, and then there's me damaging you. If I shoot an arrow, okay, or I throw a ball, and it breaks your window, it's not that my property damaged you. It's not that my ball damaged you. I damaged you. So it's not Mamoinai, it's not his nechosim, his properties is damaging, it's I am damaging. The next pasuk is dealing with fire. One of the 4 primary damagers is, we learned there's an axe, there's a pit, there's, you know, different things. One of the 4 things is fire. If I light a fire in my backyard, even if I light a fire in my backyard, and with a normal wind, meaning not a hurricane wind, all of a sudden a hurricane came, whatever. In a normal wind, the fire went off in my backyard and burned down your house, I have to pay the damages of the fire, the damages that the fire caused in your house. So there's an argument in the Gemara, and this is important in many aspects of halacha. The Gemara argues between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. In Bava Kamma there's a very famous argument. What category does fire have? Is it like my axe damaging you? Or is it like my arrow damaging you? Is eish mishum chitzyay? Is it like chet, like an arrow? Or is it like an axe? My axe damages you? It's not that I damaged you. My property damaged you. The same thing is with fire. That's what the Reish Lakish holds. Rabbi Yochanan holds, and that's the halacha, a fire is considered like I shoot an arrow, and the fire goes off me, from my place, burns down your place, I have to pay everything. But it's not my property damaging you, It's me damaging you.
Property is half damages? No, full damages. What is the difference if it's like oxalate, like arrow?
We'll see later. I mean, in practical purposes, there isn't that much of a difference. The Gemara says there are differences, but not in the practical what we're learning now. So it says like this: in Pasuk Hey, Kiseitze Yesh, if a fire will go out, Umatza Keitzim, and it will find thorns, V'Nechol Godish, or a stack of grain, or Hakama, is the crop that's standing, Ayasada, or a field, Shalim Yishalim. The one that lit the fire is obligated to pay. Because he brought the fire. And because he brought the fire and he didn't guard it to make sure it didn't go out of his property. By the way, it's a given. If I go burn down your house, for sure I have to pay. But even if not, I'm saying, I just lit a fire, I was making a barbecue in my backyard. And something happened that the fire caught onto a tree. Let's say in my backyard, and then spread and burned down somebody else's house. You have to pay. Not only do you have to pay the house, you have to pay everything that was in the house. What happens if there's an argument, you know, what was in the house? The guys that burned down says, listen, I had $100,000 worth of furniture. And the other guy says, no, you had $1,000. So the din is, the guy whose house got burned down swears. It's a biblical oath, so to speak,
three rabbis together.
In a bezdin. He swears what was in the house, and he takes it.
What if there is a third party involved? So if somebody else was... Like if someone else was in somebody else's house, and he was making barbecue, then because he lit the fire in his house, it caused the third house to get burned. So the owner of the property has to pay, or the guy who lit the fire has to pay?
The guy who lit the fire, that's what the Torah says. Hamavir esabeira. The one that lit the fire, he is the one that has to pay. He's the one that did this.
Not necessarily the owner of the property.
Correct.
Rabbi,
if I go into your house and light a fire, 426. If I go into your house and light a fire, it doesn't matter whose house it is. Because the fire is what's the damage.
But it's the guy's property who damaged the neighbor's property.
No, it didn't. If I go into your backyard and I shoot an arrow from... If I walk into your backyard, take a ball, and throw it into your neighbor's window and break it, who has to pay?
Because you were in my property, I would think I would have to pay.
But I threw the ball, not you.
I charged you in this thing.
No. Why should you pay?
You're in my property.
But what does that have to do where I'm standing? What's the device? If I go into your house and throw a ball and it breaks the guy across the street's window, why should you pay?
Because you're my property.
So what?
I'm responsible for my property, no?
Your property didn't damage. I damaged you. There's nothing. You didn't do anything. Now, to give you a few examples that the Gemara says, and Mamleis brings them down here, because they're very interesting cases. A camel is walking in the street, and it's loaded with flax, with linen, over the sides, like they used to, carry the stuff on the camel. And the storekeeper has a light, but they had fire, right? Didn't have lights. Had a fire burning in the store. And the overloaded flax on the camel catches fire into the fire that's in the store. And everything burns down. The owner of the camel is obligated to pay, because he was his fault. He overloaded his camel. And because of that, the flax, the linen, went into the store. The storekeeper had a right to have his fire where it was. He didn't do anything. The camel owner did something. So that's like lighting a fire. So in all those cases, you find, he says, what happens if you light a fire and a person got burnt? And this is the difference, by the way, one of the differences, if it's you or your property. If my property, if my ox damages you, let's say he gores you, okay, he bumps into you, and you fall down and you get all embarrassed. All I have to pay is damages. I don't have to pay embarrassment. Okay? But if I damage you and embarrass you, then I have to pay embarrassment too. We have to pay like we learned. Nezek tzadi b'shevis embashis. You have to pay damages. You have to pay pain. You have to pay doctor bills. You have to pay embarrassment. You have to pay workers' comp. Right? The month of that he's not working. If my property damages somebody, I don't have to pay that.
He's not responsible.
No, I'm not responsible. If my axe embarrasses you, I don't have to pay. If he damages you, I have to pay.
You pay half damages, no?
If the axe, yeah. But I'm saying, here I'm talking about half, I'm just saying, if I do it, I pay embarrassment. Okay? If my animal does it, I don't. What happens if I light a fire, and God forbid, somebody's hand got burnt? Okay? So there is nezek, there's damages, plus there's pain, plus says he can't go to work, let's say. So all these things, in that case, I would have to pay. Because it's not my money that's damaging you, according to the halacha. It's me damaging you. And if I damage you, then you have to pay all those damages. Nezek, tzadi, b'shev, b'shevis, and that's it. Over here, if it's only my property doing it, so then you don't have to pay those things. Now, another thing of similar to fire, by the way, what happens if, the same case again, I leave things on my roof. I leave things on my roof, and a normal wind comes and blows them off, and they fall into your house and break your windows. The din is, that's similar to fire, it's similar to throwing an arrow, and I have to pay the damages.
For negligence.
Yeah. What was the negligence? Just like if I light a fire in my backyard, I'm responsible to make sure that it's safe enough not to go everywhere else. If I leave things on my roof, I have an obligation to make sure that they're safe, that they shouldn't fall off in a normal wind, we're talking about normal weather conditions, that it shouldn't go damage somebody else. And if I don't, I'm obligated to pay.
If it's weather conditions, nobody pays anything. But it's a very strong wind and it's happened.
No, if then nobody pays, then the insurance company pays, if you're lucky. Or God pays. No, if it's a hurricane, then you're not obligated. I mean,
no,
it's not...
The insurance is not paying for
it. Okay. One thing for sure, you don't have to pay. The insurance company, you'll see. But there's a very interesting concept with fire, and the Rishonim and the Gemara ask a very interesting question. They ask a question like this. Fire is like an arrow. Right? That's where we're coming to the conclusion. When I light a fire, it's like I shoot an arrow. So it's like, what does it mean when I shoot an arrow? Halachically, it's considered as if my hand is going the whole time with the arrow. Like I'm always doing it. That's what is considered an arrow, right? So they ask a question, how is a woman allowed to light Shabbos candles on Friday? You light candles, let's say, 5 o'clock, and it burns for 4 hours. Why isn't it considered that I'm constantly lighting the flame on Shabbos? If fire is like an arrow, which means I'm constantly doing it, so then I should. How is a woman allowed to light candles on Friday? Why isn't it considered that she's constantly lighting the fire on Shabbos?
Not only for Nezakim.
No, if the Aish is a fire. If the Aish is an arrow, it's an arrow.
Only if it's Nezik, if it's no damage.
It's still the same thing. They ask, if Aish is like an arrow, then if that's the case, if that's what it is, how is a woman allowed to light candles on Shabbos?
Why would she? If you forbid her.
But the question is, how is it that they're able to do it?
Above nature.
So they answer, this is Rishonim, the Nemuki Yosef asked the question above a comma. And he answers, granted, it's like my hand is constantly going, but the whole damage was done as soon as the arrow left. As soon as I shoot the arrow, it's considered already that the window is broken. So therefore, when a woman lights candles 18 minutes before sundown, at candle lighting, it's like the whole candle is finished burning already. So therefore, she's not actually lighting the candle and Shabbos, she's lighting it on Friday. This is what they answer. So there's a famous question, the Rebbe brings this down in a Sichem. When it came to Tisha B'Av, when it comes to Tisha B'Av, we fast on the ninth day of Av. Tisha B'Av is the ninth day of Av. And the Gemara says, when was the Beis HaMikdash burnt down? Tisha B'Av in the afternoon. Tisha B'Av in the afternoon, the Goyim lit the temple, and it burnt the half a ninth and the whole tenth. It burnt the whole tenth day of Av. So the Gemara asks, so why don't we fast the tenth day of Av? Well, you should fast the tenth day. That's when the most of the building burnt. So the answer is, we can't fast 2 days. It's too much. So the beginning is the worst. So when it started burning. Okay, that's what... So Rabbi Yechanan in the Gemara, Rabbi Yechanan says, if I was there, I would have made Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av. Because that's when the main building burnt.
2 days.
I would have made it the 10th of Av. Why? Because the main building burnt on the 10th of Av. That would be the fast day. So the question is, the same Rabbi Yechanan says that the arrow is, the fire is like an arrow. And we just got through saying that as soon as you light the arrow, if you shoot the arrow, it's like done already. So how, why does Rabbi Yechanan say if it would be up to me, I'd make it on the 10th? If the fire started on the 9th, the second the fire is lit, it's like the whole thing is burned down already. So if anything, Rabbi Yechanan should say it should be on the 9th of Av, because that's when it started and that's when the whole thing is done. So the Rebbe explains like this. Why is it when I shoot an arrow, it's all done as soon as I let go of it? What's the answer? It's very simple. Because I can't do anything about it anymore. I can't stop it. When you throw a ball to break a window, as soon as I let go of it, I can't stop it. So therefore, it's considered as if it's done as soon as I let go of it. The Beis HaMikdash got burnt. And God could stop the fire. So the whole reasoning doesn't apply by God, that as soon as he lighted it, it's like the whole thing is burnt already. Because God has the ability to stop the fire. So therefore, Rabbi Yechanan says, the fact that the most of the building burnt on the 10th, he would have made the Churban Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av rather than the 9th of Av. But by regular people, as soon as you light a fire, it's considered as if the entire damage was done.
But you could stop it.
Because you can't stop it.
Yes, you could.
How?
Water.
No, speaking once it goes out of your domain already.
Oh.
It's like out of your control. And that's why the halacha is, as soon as a woman lights candles, it's considered as if the whole thing is done already. There's nothing else that you have to do. But again, it's not only fire. This din of fire, the Gemara says, refers to any damage that because of wind, not normal wind, things happen because of what your actions did, whether it's lighting a fire, putting your things on the roof or whatever, then you're obligated to pay.
Somebody put stone and broken it. Who broke it?
He doesn't have to pay. The Gemara says, because of this din, by the way,
mm-hmm.
The Gemara says, if I throw a glass or a vase or whatever down a roof, down from the roof, I throw it down to the ground. And while it's mid-air, somebody takes the hammer and breaks the glass. Who has to pay?
The guy that broke the glass.
Nope.
No,
I know you would say that.
And that's why you said it. The Gemara says, the first guy has to pay for it. Why? The second guy broke a broken dish already. Even though it didn't break yet. The fact when a guy throws it down, it's going to break. For sure it's going to break. So therefore, when you broke it, you didn't break anything. You broke a broken glass already. Because the second he threw it down, it's already broken.
And if you would have stopped it?
How could you stop it? If you caught it, you mean?
Yeah,
so you did the guy a favor.
Yeah, it's flow.
it would not be considered.
Well, sometimes by miracles.
You know, the Gemara says, what happens if you're not allowed to cook on Shabbat, right? So what happens 2 minutes before Shabbat? You put some, or better yet, on Shabbat, somebody put something on the fire to cook.
You can't.
You're not allowed to, but he did it. Okay? And another guy saw it, and before it became cooked, another guy came and took it off the fire. So it never cooked. Do you kill the first guy for desecrating Shabbos?
Desecrating Shabbos?
He never cooked.
He
wanted to. You don't punish for wanting. Did he? Bottom line is, did he desecrate Shabbos?
Yes, job was not done.
Job was not done. He didn't desecrate Shabbos.
But he desecrated. He put something.
It didn't cook. But it didn't cook.
Intention.
So you get punished for intention. What do you get for intention?
He saved his life.
What did they say? The road to hell is paved with good intentions. I mean, what does it mean? You don't get anything. No, that's the law. So what did the guy do? The guy did him a favor. Like this, he would have got killed. Now he doesn't get killed.
Did you put it on before Shabbat?
No, I'm saying you put it on Shabbat.
On Shabbat.
It's cooking on Shabbat.
They said just before Shabbat.
No, then I changed it because then it makes. So he said he put it on Shabbat, he puts it on the fire.
To cook.
And let's say it takes an hour to cook, yeah? That he should be chayiv. But 10 minutes later, the guy takes it off the fire. So even though he wanted to cook it, but the bottom line is it didn't get cooked. So he wouldn't be obligated. You did the guy a favor. So if the guy throws something down. By the way, even in Halacha, if I throw something down the roof and it's going to break, yeah? And you catch it, are you allowed to keep it? Because you could come along and say, listen, I threw it down the roof, I broke it.
As far as you're concerned, it's broken.
It's broken. But you caught it. The answer is you still can't keep it.
No.
But again, did a favor to
he did a favor that the guy doesn't have to pay for it. But we're going to learn soon what happens if I throw something down from the roof and there's pillows on the floor. And it's not going to break. Right? Because I'm throwing them onto pillows. And after I throw it down, a guy comes and grabs away the pillow. And then it hits the floor and breaks. No, the Gemara talks all about these. These are very common cases. I mean, not in today's world. You just have to apply it a little bit differently. But a guy is throwing it down, and when he throws it down, it's not supposed to break, correct? And another guy comes and pulls away the pillow. So what's the halacha? Both don't have to pay.
Even the guy who pulled out.
What did he do?
He pulled it out, so he was
so,
right.
There's a crime pulling away a pillow? Did I break your dish?
Not if it's intention.
Did I break your dish?
No.
This is grammar. No, but what was your intention?
It's grammar. It's grammar, it's indirect, and you're not obligated to pay.
You cut somebody's bricks and they died, and it's indirect?
Murder may be indirect. Technically, you're not capital punishment, no. It's indirect damages. And the Gemara says even a better case. They're discussing all these cases soon. Not in the Chumash, but the Mamleis discusses them. What happens if I take a plate of poison and put it in front of your animal? I don't feed your animal. I just put it in front of your animal. Your animal eats the poison and dies. I do not have to pay. In court, the Gemara said between you and God, you know, you should try to do something about it. Because you did something wrong.
So if a guy jumps off the roof,
tempting the devil.
What did I do? Did I kill your animal? No, I didn't. I put down food on the floor. If I feed your animal, then I damaged your animal. If I put down food, I did not do anything to your animal.
But isn't that the same thing?
No. No, feeding is an active job of killing. That doesn't matter. That's not my business. I didn't do it.
But if you take out the head of the tarnigol, the tarnigol will die. If you know, the animal will eat it.
No. The animal, I'm telling the animal, they maybe won't eat it.
There's
not for sure.
It's an animal.
So if somebody jump off the roof And somebody he knows is going to land on a piece of fabric or one of these plastic things that hold it. And the other guy, what do you call him?
Trampoline.
Whatever, yeah.
And the other guy comes and pulls it away. And the guy dies. No, none of them would have to pay in that case.
Between you and God, there's a Chabad Bezdin cannot kill you, no.
As you have to go to your
I would think it would depend on what the intention of the guy who's pulling the...
If I owe you $10,000. And you have an IOU note to collect. Yeah? And I come and burn your document. And now you cannot collect it because you have no proof. I'm going to say, you never owed me. The din is, Gemara says, Potter medine adam, v'chayiv medine shemayim. Meaning, between the court and you, the court cannot obligate you because you didn't do anything. But between you and God, you know, if you want to have a clean record upstairs, you better do something about it.
Wait, I have a question.
What?
I found something similar. Like this woman was unhappy with her husband, and then there was a field, so she's running, there was a well, so she almost caught her leg in it, and then finally she had an idea to say, oh, you know what, if it happens to me, it can happen to my husband. So when he's running, she makes him run after her, because he was abusive, okay. And then he falls in the well and he dies. So now this is called accident? Pure accident?
No, she cannot be punished in court.
She's not punished.
Cannot.
No, but Hashem would punish. No, that's different. I'm talking about
him. But the person that take out the field on the trampoline has to go to your miklat?
Jewish court.
No.
Jewish court.
No, if you...
No.
I got another question. If somebody wants to take it out this field, would another person say, don't do this because somebody's supposed to come?
Doesn't matter what he says.
No.
He's still not obligated to pay.
No. If somebody say, don't do it because another person will be killed, die.
It's not direct.
He's not a nice person, but you can't obligate him.
One person will be killed. What means not direct diet? You already got a knowledge of this.
It doesn't matter. I'll give you another case with this applies to this then that we're learning here. What happens if...
Okay.
One second.
I got another question. If this person anyway wants to take it out, I kill him.
That's an action of killing. You can't...
Okay, but I prove...
I know you want to kill him, but you still can't.
If you do it, how I will be punished?
That's only between you and... If you shoot the guy...
Yes.
No, you shoot him.
Nobody tell me don't kill him.
No, if you shoot somebody, then Bezdin kills you. If you kill somebody,
I shoot him, but I have no two witnesses for it.
Okay, so then God will kill the person. No witnesses, then God will kill the person somehow.
Okay. It means I work as a king of God, right?
Right.
That's
it. Now, what happens if I bring... The Gemara says, negate this thing. What happens, the Gemara says, I bring stuff into your house without permission. And you get angry at me. What do you bring all this junk into my house? You know, all these dishes into my house. And I get angry at you and I break your dishes. The din is, even though I had no permission to bring them into your house, you're not allowed to break them. And if you do, you have to pay. The only thing you could do is take them and put them out of the house. But you can't break them. And if you break them, it's like your arrow, like we're learning here, the ash, it's like you did it and you're obligated to pay. Even though the guy had no permission to bring them into your house.
Doesn't make sense.
Why?
Because you should have asked them permission.
He didn't. Therefore, you could break it. Therefore, you could break it.
Everybody's going to bring everything into your house.
That doesn't mean anything, but you can't. The Gemara says even more. The Gemara says that you're not allowed to look into your friend's field at the time it's growing. Why? For instance, the Gemara says that two neighbors that have a courtyard next to each other, they have to build a wall between them. Why? That the guy, one guy shouldn't look into the other guy's business. So the Gemara says, not only because of, menschlichkeit, you know, to be a mensch. Because the Gemara says, Ein a bracha sheira, Ela adover hasomu mino ayin. A bracha can only come a thing which is hidden. So therefore, there's what the Gemara calls it hezek ri'iyah. There's a damage that you can do by looking at somebody. But basically, the question over here is, if I didn't look at your field, okay, because then it would be hidden, God would give you a bracha and would grow unbelievably much more. And because I'm looking at it, you're not getting that bracha. Is that called damaging or not? So there's, one second, there's two opinions in the Gemara. But, the question, by the way, this is a very practical question in today's halacha. What happens, everybody says, if I damage your property, I have to pay you. Yeah, that's for sure. What happens if what's called in Hebrew, I cause menias harevach? I don't cause you damage, I prevent you from making a profit. Like in this case, if I didn't look, you would have had much more bracha in the field. Now that I looked, I didn't damage you.
How do you know if you look it was...
I didn't damage you. What I did was, I didn't allow a bracha to come. Or, okay, what happens if a guy stops somebody from making a profit? I don't damage you. I don't make you lose any money. What's the din, though, if I stop you from making a profit? In business, I stop you from making a profit.
How can you stop something?
Well, how can you?
No.
How can you stop somebody? I do something.
So I take
something from you. Okay? And because I didn't give back to you on time, you could have made a profit with that and now you can't.
No, let's go back to the ayin.
1 second. So there's a machlekes in halacha, there's an argument in halacha, if that is called a damage or not. Is that called damaging that you would have to pay? Or is it called I didn't damage you? If I didn't damage you, I don't have to pay. I blocked you from making a profit. So I stopped you from making a profit. I'm not a nice person. But you can't obligate the person for paying that because I didn't actually damage the person.
Okay, I have a question.
What?
Let's say someone is building a field. It's not very practical field. This is building a building. And showing it to you. And something, what you're saying is that by showing it to his friend, listen, I'm building that building, I bought it. So you, according to what you're saying, it could take away the bracha from him by showing it to other people.
You're not allowed to do it. I'm saying, can the court make you pay money? That's the question.
No, but I'm talking about how it takes bracha away from the person.
Don't talk too much. This is only one.
No, maybe you don't have ayin hara. Maybe you have ayin hara.
But I'm saying, what happens if it's ayin hara or what's called hezekiah, which is not necessarily ayin hara, is just because of what I'm doing, I'm stopping you from making a profit.
Okay.
Can the courts obligate me to pay? There's another type of damage, by the way, that the Gemara says, and Taisa says in the Gemara in Chulin, that today we don't practice this din, even though the Gemara says it's a din, for various reasons. The Gemara tells a story, a guy once shechted an animal, a bird, and you know, there's a mitzvah, you have to cover the blood, like by kaparis, you cover the blood. So a guy shechted an animal, and another guy ran it before him and covered the blood. He took away his mitzvah. The Gemara says a story. A guy took away somebody else's mitzvah from him, and Rabbi Gamliel made him pay 10 golden coins.
Wow.
Because Rabbi Gamliel says, there's a monetary value to a mitzvah. And if I steal a mitzvah from you, I have to pay money. Taisa says we don't do it today. But the Gemara says a few cases where you'd steal somebody's mitzvah, and because of that, they made you pay.
Does he get credit for it when he steals it?
Yeah, you still get credit for the mitzvah.
Who does? The guy who's stealing?
The guy that did the mitzvah.
You could have a stolen mitzvah and get credit?
It's not a stolen mitzvah. It's not. What did I steal? I didn't steal an esrig and do a bracha with it. I didn't steal money. There's blood on the floor, so I covered it.
Why is she feeling?
It's not a mitzvah.
Who did the job? Did I finish the job?
That's a different story.
Rabbi,
what?
It's interesting because I have never heard, never, when I went to school and when I taught school, and we're talking of a half a century, I never heard of some of the things you spoke about tonight, like somebody on the top of a roof throwing a glass down.
All right, son.
Oh, yeah, only half a century.
That's Gemara.
What, honey?
Only half a century, you are younger than me.
That's not your fault. That's
not okay, fair. Anyway.
But I'm not younger than you.
That's these dinim of so to speak, similar to the concept of fire and this whole din. Okay, next pasuk vav. Next din, the Torah is speaking about the laws of a guardian. And the Gemara, just to preface it, to give an introduction to it, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, there's four shomrim. A shomer is a guardian. Now, there's two, from the four, it's like two and two. I ask you to watch something for me. That, and I don't pay you. That is called Shomer Chinam. You're watching for free. That's one law of responsibility. Then there's another law, if I pay you to watch it. So the fact that I'm paying you to watch it obligates you more to watch it better. Because I'm paying you. I mean, after all, you should watch it better. Then you have two other types. A borrower and a renter. If I borrow your cow, or I rent your cow. Now, it's still your cow. I'm still obligated to watch it. So these are four different classifications of a shomer. There's a guy that watches for free. There's a guy, he's not allowed to use it. A guy that watches it gets paid for watch it. These two guys are not allowed to use it. The second they use it, they become a ganef. And no matter what happens to the object, they're going to have to pay. They're not allowed to use it. The other two, the borrower and the renter, the pasuk is going to explain, they are allowed to use it. That's what you're doing. You're borrowing it to use, or you're renting it to use. So then the question is, what are you obligated in things if it got stolen, lost, died, whatever? What are you obligated to pay and what are you not obligated to pay? And the Torah is not very clear in all the dinim, but the way the Gemara explains it is as follows. We're going to explain it outside, then we'll see it inside. A guy that watches for free, okay? The din is, if he was negligent, so I'm watching your cow, okay? And I leave the barn door open, and the animal goes out and gets killed, so obviously that's called negligence. I have to pay. It's called pshia, negligent. If it was stolen or lost, that means I watched it normal watching, but it was stolen or somehow it got lost. The din is I have to come to Beis Din, swear that's what happened, and I don't have to pay. If an accident happened to the animal, meaning I'm taking care of the animal in the barn and the animal just died, I have to swear that that's what happened, and I don't have to pay. So Shomer Chinam, because he's not getting paid to watch, he is the most lenient in the laws. The only thing he has to pay for is negligence. Shomer Sachar, a guy who's paid to watch, because he is getting paid, so he has to watch it better. So therefore the din is like this. If it's negligent, he has to pay. Stolen or lost, he has to pay. If an accident happened, he doesn't have to pay. That means if you pay me to watch your animal, and a hurricane happened, or the animal just died natural death, you're not being negligent, the Torah says you don't have to pay.
So Rabbi, it's like if you're at the airport, and you say, watch my bag for someone.
You're Shomer Chinam.
And then someone rips off the bag, so it's...
Well, the question, were you negligent or not? If you walked away from the bag and somebody stole it, but what happens if you were holding the bag and a big bully came with a gun and said, give me the bag, and the guy runs off, so then you don't have to pay.
Okay.
Rabbi.
But if he pays you to watch it, one second. If he pays you to watch it, so then it's a different thing. Yeah.
So what would be the deal?
Let's present this as it happened many times during wars. A guy from the United States.
Okay, you have 30 seconds.
Okay. He's on guard duty, and he's watching five prisoners.
No, we're talking here about properties, not prisoners.
Oh, because there are times when prisoners have killed that guard and escaped.
Yeah, I heard of it.
That guard and escaped.
Yeah.
What do? You
try to find them.
You find the guard? No.
No, you try to find the prisoners. What do you do?
Oh, well. Willie, I love your stories. Keep on going.
No, please do me a favor. You get this once a week. We get this every night.
Lita.
Shh.
Okay.
Be nice.
Now, a renter, somebody that rents something, is a machlekes, an argument in the Gemara, in the Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. A renter, does he have a din of a guy that watches for free? Or does he have a din of a guy that's paid to watch? The halacha is, he is obligated like a guy that's paid to watch. So if I rent your animal, it got stolen or lost, I have to pay. If I rented your animal and I'm negligent, for sure I have to pay. If I rented your animal and just died a natural death, I don't have to pay. The fourth case is a very unique. That's called a shoel. A shoel is a borrower for free. Okay, he's borrowing it for free. So over there, the Gemara says, since the Gemara uses the expression ho'el shakol hanah shalo, he gets all benefit. He's using it for free, so he's obligated for everything. Which means the animal was negligent, you have to pay. Stolen or lost, you have to pay. If the cow died in my barn, a natural death, I have to pay. The only time you don't have to pay, there's two exceptions by a shoel when you don't have to pay. If I borrowed your cow to plow a field, and while it was plowing, it died, then I don't have to pay.
Why?
Because that's what I borrowed it for, and I wasn't negligent. Like Gemara says, I didn't borrow it to go on in the plain field and it took him on a mountain. I was just, you let me, I'll give you a simple example. In today's world, I borrow your saw. I borrow your electric saw. Okay? And I'm using the saw, not for something that I shouldn't be using it for. I'm using it to cut a piece of wood. Okay? And the saw broke in the middle of cutting wood. And I wasn't negligent, I didn't do anything wrong. It just broke. The din is I don't have to pay a cent.
So you borrow somebody's car?
And?
To go to Santa Barbara?
And the car dies?
The car dies?
And it wasn't your negligence?
No.
You don't have to pay.
No.
I'm telling you Torah law. I'm telling you Torah law. One second. Another case is the Torah says, in Baal of Imai, what happens when I borrowed the cow? At that moment I borrowed the cow, I borrowed the owner. I asked him to bring me a cup of water. The fact that when I borrowed the cow, I borrowed the owner, anything that happens to the animal, I don't have to pay either. I know this is, the Torah says, in Baal of Imai, if the owner, we're going to see later in the psukim. If the owner is with you, lo yishalom, you don't have to pay.
Oh, because he's present.
Even if he's not present at the time of the accident. When you borrowed the cow, you borrowed the owner, so at that time, you automatically don't have to pay. Okay, now, there's a few ways of learning this, by the way. The Alter Rebbe says in Shulchan Aruch, an interesting concept.
I have a question.
One second. When I watch your animal, or borrow your animal, or rent your animal, the Torah says like this. You took an animal, you have to give back an animal. The Torah frees me from paying under certain conditions. But primarily, I take your cow, I have to give back your cow. The obligation is, when I take it, I have to pay for it. If certain things happen, the Torah says, you know what? We're going to free you from the obligation that you had to pay. But the bottom line is, Shem Echinam, if it's stolen or lost because he's not getting paid, he's doing the guy a favor, the Torah says we're going to be lenient about you. You're doing a guy a favor. So if you're negligent, then it's like you damaged it with your own hands. In the halacha it says the expression poshea, a person who's negligent, tareu kmazik. It's like he broke it himself. Okay? If you paid to watch, so the Torah says we're going to obligate you more. You have to pay for stolen or lost. Accident, natural, that's why should you have to pay? Renter is like the Shem HaSachar, according to the halacha. And a shoyl is, because you get all the benefit, you have to pay for everything. What?
Now, is this applied to also objects or only animals that you have to use?
Doesn't matter. It depends what you're borrowing it for.
You borrow money and some...
No, but borrowing money is completely different. Because if I borrow...
They come and steal you, so you
still... The difference is... There's a difference. That's why, by the way, in Gemara, in Hebrew, in any language you want, I borrow a cow, but in Hebrew it's called shomer or shoel. You don't shoel money. You are lova money. It's a different concept. If I lend you a cow, you have to give me back the same cow. You can't change cows, right? But if I lend you $1,000, you don't have to give me the $1,000 they gave you.
I can give you a friend.
Any $1,000.
In pennies,
we said before. So there's a big difference. When I lend you money, it's made to spend. Milva lahitsa nitna, the Gemara says. Milva loan was made to, and therefore I'll give you an example. If a man lent a woman $1,000 two weeks ago, okay, and today he comes over to the woman and says, you know what? Hare atma kudashisli, you are married to me with the money I lent you 2 weeks ago. The Gemara says it's not a good kedushin because right now you didn't give her anything. But if I lend you my cow, okay, if a man lends a woman a cow, it's not fun, was it? And he says, become a kudush to me, become my wife with the cow, then she does become a kudushus. No, what's the difference? No, what's the difference? With the ring, it doesn't have to be a ring.
No, but the money you would think is worth more than a cow.
No, but it's not the point. One second. The point.
Can she say no to what you
did? Yes. Last week's Pasha, they said we have to ask Rivka. Come on, second. Let me stop. I have to explain this. It's a very simple concept. What? All kedushin has to be is a shava pruta, a penny, okay, maybe 2 cents. Okay, now by kedushin, the din is when a man wants to get married to the woman, okay, to do kedushin, he has to give her something now. He can't say become a kudeshes to me with what I gave you a month ago, because right now you're not giving anything. Part of kedushin is you have to give her something in the presence of two witnesses, and you have to say that you're betrothed to me, right? Now, if I lent you money a week ago, an hour ago, 2 days ago, doesn't matter when, and now I'm coming and say that you're mekudeshes to me with the money I gave you yesterday, okay, even if she has the money in her pocket, even if the money, she didn't spend it yet. The Gemara says, right now you didn't give her anything. Because you gave her that money, she has to give you back something completely different. But if I gave her a book, I mean, I use the example of a cow because that's what the Gemara uses. But if I give, I lent a woman a book to read, okay? This book, she has to give back to me. So the book is mine even when she has it. The money I lend you is not my money anymore. Right now, it's your money. You have to give me back $1,000. There's nothing to do with my money. So if I give a woman a cow, let's use a case because this is Gemara's case. But if I give a woman a book to borrow, I lend a woman a book. It's my book. I lend her the book. She's reading the book. It's my book. It's not her book. Okay? And then now, today, I say, you know what? With that book that I lent you, become mekudeshes to me. So that then she's mekudeshes. Why? Because right now I gave her something. By loan, so I'm saying lending money is completely different than this stuff. Unless, if I give you money to watch for me, not a loan, I give you money to watch,
my money.
If I give you money to watch, it's my money that you're watching, But then if I say to the woman, become a kodeshes to me with it, okay, then it's good. But because I didn't lend it to her. What?
So if you give money to a stockbroker and you give him instructions, you know, to buy or sell or whatever, and he doesn't do it, is that the same thing?
Well, then you have the question. If he didn't buy the stock when you told he told you to, and you lost money, so in halacha he might have to pay. But if he didn't buy it and it made a profit and he caused you to lose the profit, that again is what we said before. Is losing a profit considered money or not?
Or if he didn't